today is really following instructions. It's not a challenging thing. The biggest challenge is waiting on all the rinses, because you're just going to be dancing your Tupperware all day, over and over, with different stuff in it each time. But that's all you're doing, really. I just want to, before letting you loose on that, though, talk about the blotting process a little bit more, because that's stuff that's new this week. You really only started the process last week, right? You left when you just had started the second electrophoresis trial. And what was that for? Exactly. You did the first electrophoresis to standard electrophoresis. You moved those proteins through the length of the gel. Then the second electrophoresis moved them out of the thickness of the gel onto the membrane. And that membrane is chosen, either that or sometimes nitrocellulose. They both have the advantage of being pretty non-discriminatory binders of proteins in general. In other words, proteins of all sorts will easily stick, because of hydrophobic interactions and other interactions, to that material on the membrane. And therefore it's ready to take that up when it leaves the gel, because of the electrophoresis forcing it through. And that's where you left it. You know, sometime over that night, it reached the membrane, and that's where it is now. But we're not done yet, because just like you don't see those proteins in the gel, right, until you do something to image them, you wouldn't see those proteins on the membrane. Now, one thing that you didn't do at all, and then you just left that to Roz, did it while you were gone, is that she put the membranes, after she disassembled them from the units, she put the two membranes that you guys generated in milk, a milk solution. And what was that acting as? What is the milk doing? What's it? It's acting as what? What's it called?
Buffer?
Not a buffer. No. A blocking solution. It's called a blocking solution because it's blocking something. Well, to make sense of that, think about what you need to do today to actually see your proteins on the membrane. You won't see them when you first get your membrane back. They're still invisible. What is it you do today that actually makes them visible? You're dealing with antibodies today. So what you're doing today is really a type of immunoassay. And it's very similar to what occurs in what's called an ELISA. Have you heard of ELISA tests, or have you done them before? Which is exactly what a over-the-counter pregnancy test is an example of. It's a test for the presence of some particular thing that you're interested in. That's why we use antibodies, or immunoglobulins as they're also called, because antibodies have the benefit of being very specific. They recognize a particular type of particle, and that's how they function in immunity. But we take advantage of that for other purposes. What is the general name given for a particle that is recognized by an antibody? It's an antigen, correct. An antigen can be big or small, but there's really a specific place on an antigen that the antibody itself can recognize. What is that part of the antigen called that's recognizable by the antibody? No, but it's kind of similar. It's the part that's actually doing the binding with the antibody. It's called the epitope. So the epitope is the specific part of an antigen that gets recognized by an antibody. Okay, now back to this immunoassay aspect of today, or ELISA, like I said, they're really doing the same thing. You're using how many antibodies? Two. And that's the normal case, although it's possible to do this just with one if you design it and spend a lot of money doing it that way. But it's usually done with two antibodies that we call the primary and secondary antibodies. And I'll explain why it makes sense to do it that way in a minute. The primary antibody, though, is the antibody that you need to specifically choose among thousands that are available to recognize that particular thing that you're trying to find, right? In your case, you're trying to find specific proteins on your membrane surface. So you need to use an antibody that's able to recognize those proteins. Okay? The proteins that you've electrophoresed onto the membrane, in other words, are acting as antigens for this antibody that you're going to treat it with. But if you think about that happening, antibodies will stick to those antigens, of course, right? But that doesn't get you anywhere beyond where you already are as far as visualizing it. So you have invisible proteins, and now you've put invisible antibodies onto those proteins. You still don't see any bands or anything, right?
So that's where the alkaline phosphatase comes from.
Exactly. That's why, in general, you need the secondary antibody. The primary antibody is there just to selectively stick to what you're interested in. The secondary antibody is there to stick or find and stick to the primary antibody. But the secondary antibody has the added attribute that it is bound to an enzyme as well. And that enzyme is able to, as enzymes do, catalyze a reaction. In this case, a reaction that causes a color change so that you can actually visualize it finally then. Yeah. Yeah, the enzyme is actually part, it's designed to be part of that secondary antibody. Now, an antibody or immunoglobulin is typically drawn in a Y shape, because that's basically how they are, right? You have this Y shape is a complete antibody, but the tips of the Y, the diagonal tips of the Y, these are the recognition ends of the antibody. That's why antibodies are different from each other. This is the variable region. This is the constant region. So all antibodies have basically the same constant region, but they differ in their variable regions at the tips. And that's what makes each different kind of antibody able to recognize a specific epitope. Okay? Well, the primary antibody is chosen to be the one that will recognize the protein that you're interested in today. Okay? Here's where it comes in, why it's cost effective to make to use two. How is it that you get these? How is it that you make these primary antibodies? I mean, how could you? Exactly. You just use nature to do the job. In other words, take the antigen that you're interested in, introduce it into an organism that's a foreign particle to, and it will produce antibodies against it as part of its immunity. Then you harvest those antibodies from the animal. Okay? Now you have the primary antibody. The secondary antibody, though, is the one that is more expensive because it has to be designed with this enzyme on it. And therefore, you don't want to have a specially designed enzyme-linked antibody that recognizes your particular antigen, because that would be a very expensive antibody, right? Instead, you use the secondary antibody that just about anyone can use, because what it recognizes is the constant region of the primary antibody, whichever one you use. This constant region is the same for all the antibodies. So if you get a secondary antibody that can recognize this, now everyone can use basically the same kind of secondary antibody, no matter what kind of primary antibody they use. And that brings the cost way down. Does that make sense? So there's an enzyme linked to this one. And that's why ELISA, which uses the same setup, like I said, is an acronym for enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay. We're doing much the same thing for this Western blot. So you have your membrane. It has some proteins on it that came from your gel. You treat that with primary antibody, and the antibodies are going to stick to it, right? Secondary antibody will stick to the primary antibodies. And then you treat it with substrate for that enzyme, and it will turn a color. Now back to the blocking agent, which is what I started with. Why do we need the blocking agent? It's because of something I already told you about the nature of the membrane itself. What did I say was true of the membrane? What things?
Proteins.
What are antibodies?
Proteins.
So yes, they will definitely stick to the antigen, which they're specific to, but they're also just proteins, so they will stick on their sides or in some orientation to anywhere on that membrane, just like your proteins did already. Therefore, you need to block all of the background where you don't have your proteins of interest stuck already. You need to put some other proteins there that the antibody won't recognize, just so that they will take up all that room that the antibodies could stick to otherwise.
Okay, so what's the sequence that the protein's stuck, then you put the milk on, and then you put
yes.
the agent on?
Yeah, you put your proteins of interest came from your gel. They are on there. They were there overnight. And that's the only proteins on there at first. Then Roz puts that into the blocking solution, which is just a milk solution which has proteins in it. And all of the available spots on that membrane where your proteins did not stick will be stuck by milk proteins, which your primary antibody won't recognize. So they're taking up positions that the primary antibody, just as run-of-the-mill proteins, would be able to stick to. Because all proteins stick to that membrane. And therefore, the only places where the primary antibodies will stick are where it finds the epitope, which is your protein that you're interested in. Okay? So that first treatment with the first antibody, it will allow that to happen. Then you do a rinse to get rid of all the unbound primary antibodies that didn't stick to anything. Get rid of those. Then you wash it with secondary antibody, and they will stick only where they find primary antibodies. Then you rinse the rest of those unbound secondary antibodies away. Then you treat it with the substrate for that enzyme that the secondary antibody is carrying. And that will cause that enzyme to change that substrate into product, which is a different color. That's where you finally get your color development. Okay, so that has the same effect as staining would in a gel, but on the membrane itself. Yeah.
So the manual said that there are two colors that it turns. It turns a blue if it's oxidized, and a purple if it's reduced.
Right. You'll see blue-purple color. That's
not two separate colors, like one's one thing and one's another thing. That's not what it means.
You will see very slight differences in tone, but not very much. But it'll be a different color from the stain that you'll see in your gel. Although they'll be in the same positions, because the membrane will match up with the gel, right? Or it should. So that's what you're looking at today. It's going to seem kind of anticlimactic when you go through all these steps, and then you finally end up with something you're going to spend 20 seconds taking a picture of, and then you're done. But that's what you need to do. And so you need to get started right away because there's so many of these wash steps that it's going to take you the rest of the time. Now, do not start with imaging the gel because you have so much waiting time that you can do that whenever you get a chance to. Start immediately with getting your membrane out of the milk solution, getting started on that. You should have everything you need up here. You don't need anything from my station because you have all of that up out here already. But be very careful with when you're reading labels, especially because there are two different solutions that have Triz, only one of which does not also have Tween. There's Triz with Tween and Triz without Tween. Make sure you are using the correct one in the correct spots. Okay? Read all your labels. There was something else. Yes, get started with C, and you'll notice that some of those are like 20-minute washes. So that's like I said, it takes the rest of the time probably to get through all this. But what the hell was I going to say? Oh, well, it says that your membrane should have a corner cut on it, which Roz forgot to do. That's no big deal, though, because you can still make sense of it when you compare it to your gel image, because they correspond. Because you have two gels, right? You have a gel that should be largely blank, because that has been electrofreezed out onto the membrane. And then you have your other gel, which all you did was stain it, and that should have all of the bands. Use that one as reference when you try to make sense of the directionality of the membrane. But also, as far as visualizing the gels themselves, if you want to, you can go through the process like we did before of using the scanner. But really, I think it makes just as good an image if you get rid of most of the liquid from it and just keep your gel in the Tupperware. That way you don't risk tearing it. Just put that on a white sheet of paper and take a picture of it. You get just as good an image, I think. But if you want to do both, also, if you want to take a picture of it and then scan it, that's fine too. Just let me know if you want to scan it. All right, I'll let you do it.